The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Welcome to the weekend edition of the Undisputed Podcast. I'm your host, Jenny Taft. Today's podcast features all the best segments from this week's slate of Undisputed. With in-depth interviews and discussions, we have a lot to talk about heading into next week. Skip, Shannon, let's get to it.
As we continue to witness just how competitive Michael Jordan was during The Last Dance, Dennis Rodman said that's one area that helps MJ in the GOAT debate. When comparing MJ and LeBron, Rodman said that LeBron, quote, doesn't have that desire to win at any cost that Jordan had. Shannon, is there any truth to this?
No. And I want to know why Dennis Rodman feels he needs to keep LeBron's name in his dentures. It's not good enough. See, Dennis Rodman was out of sight, out of mind. And then all of a sudden, the documentary, I think two series ago, Skip, they're talking about him going to Vegas, and now all of a sudden he wants to be back in the national spotlight. See, it's not good enough. Skip, here's the thing. Dennis Rodman can say 1,000 words, and no newspaper, nobody will pick it up. But he says 1,001 word, and that one word is LeBron. You already know what's going to happen. And that's where we are right now, Skip Bayless. Why is this man constantly in your mouth? Because, see, this is what happened, Skip, and we've talked about this before. Everybody feels their era is the best. We feel sacred. We hold that dearly. And if somebody says somebody from a different era is better than somebody in us, we feel that's a knock on all of us because we're supposed to have the best. So now it lessens, it cheapens all of us. No, you can stand alone. LeBron can be great on his own. Okay, we want to debate the GOAT talk. Okay, fine. You like Jordan? I'm not finna fight anybody because they're saying Jordan is better than LeBron. I like LeBron. I'm not finna fight anybody on that stance, but that's just what I believe. But Dennis Rodman, for all of a sudden, every word that comes out of his mouth has something to do with LeBron. Skip, he can dress in a wedding dress. He can put on a wig. He can do all the stuff, and nobody would pay him any attention. But the moment he says something about LeBron, we already know it's going to be in a negative light, and it's going to spread like wildfire in the California hills. And that's what he keeps doing. Keep that man. That man is in quarantine with his wife and kid. He's training. He's not thinking about Dennis Rodman. But for some reason, we keep flipping over rocks, and this critter keeps crawling out from under with something negative to say. Bruh, why you got to keep that man's name in your mouth?
Shannon, quick point of order. When Dennis Rodman dressed in a wedding dress, he was on the cover of every sports section in America. He was on magazine covers. He was hot in those years.
He
dominated the conversation when he was dating Madonna and Carmen Electra. He dominated national barbershop conversation. So,
Skip.
The reason I love Dennis Rodman, go ahead.
My only point is, Skip, yes, but you have to realize what happens now if he dresses in a wedding dress, if he cross-dresses. He's not in the NBA. He's not winning rebounding titles. He's not winning championships. He's not dating Madonna. He doesn't have that. So now what? The only way he can get his name in the headlines is by doing what? Trashing GOAT James. Come on, Skip, you know how this works. This is what I tell football players all the time, Skip. You might think you're different outside, but people want to talk to you and want to hear what you got to say because you're in the NFL. You'll find out once you're out of the NFL how many reality TV shows you get once you leave the NFL. Then come talk to your boy.
What I love and have always loved about Dennis Rodman is that beneath the crazy, wacky, dysfunctional Dennis Rodman is this sort of ineloquent brilliance, basketball brilliance, this simple basketball genius that allowed him at 6 feet 8 inches tall to dominate the league as a below-the-rim rebounder. Year after year after year, he led the league in rebounding at 6'8", because he was so instinctive. He had the gift of seeing it before it happened. And he had the pleasure and the honor of getting to play with Michael Jeffrey Jordan. He knows. This was a bullseye statement. Yes, he's being interviewed more because of The Last Dance, but if you ask him about LeBron, he's just going to tell you the point-blank truth that you can't handle. It's a bingo truth. It's right on the button, because it's exactly what I've been saying since 2006 on national television. Michael wanted to win. He had that raging desire to win at any cost that LeBron just isn't built to have. LeBron's more of a lover than a fighter. LeBron, I've always said, he's a really nice guy, truly a nice guy, to a fault. He's too nice of a guy to lift a team and drive a team the way Jordan drove a team to 6 championships and 6 tries with 6 finals MVPs. In the end, Michael Jordan was about killer will and supreme mental clutch toughness and psycho drive that I don't see in LeBron. LeBron can degenerate under fire into this finger-pointing blame deflector who will tend to throw his teammates under the public bus. Witness the quote during the 2016 Super Bowl that we attended in Houston, in which he, after a game in New Orleans, a loss in New Orleans for the Cleveland Cavaliers, said, "We're top heavy as, you know what, bleep." And
right.
Jordan never would have said that.
Criticized it.
Jordan's not going to dismiss his teammates. Jordan's going to do it behind closed doors that we're getting open now in the documentary. But he ridiculed and drove his teammates in practice, in the locker room, on the team plane. He did not do it through the media. There was no social media where LeBron takes these subtle, between the lines, passive aggressive shots at Kevin Love. You know, are you with us or not? Are you within or without? I couldn't even understand what he was talking about, and I don't think Kevin could either. LeBron doesn't love one-on-one, face-to-face confrontation. He shies from that. He does it through social media. He was born to be on social media. And his billions of blind witnesses love him and follow him like this modern-day Pied Piper on social media. But they're blinded to what he really is until now. And I think billions of blind witnesses are getting their eyes open to, uh-oh, that guy, he was on another plane, another level from LeBron James. And that's all Dennis is saying, that rage to win, that drive, that thing. That Jordan had this great quote last night, Shannon, that just summed it up. And he got emotional when he was saying it, and he finally had to say break, because he just couldn't talk anymore. But he said, "My mentality was, I'm going to win at any cost, at any cost. And if you don't want to go with me on this, if you don't want to live with my regimented mentality, then I don't want you alongside me. And if you're going to stay beside me until you reach my level, I'm going to ridicule you. And if you can't reach my level, it's going to be hell for you." That's it. That's the essence. That's not LeBron James we're talking about. That's Michael Jeffrey Jordan, the GOAT. That's what made him the GOAT. It wasn't pretty. It was often ugly. Will Perdue said in the documentary, he often crossed the line, and he did. You call it bullying.
But genius leadership.
It's the way.
No, it's not genius, Skip. He crossed the line. The man is telling you he crossed the line. But you're saying it's okay because he won 6 championships?
It worked.
It worked well.
It worked. He said, "I'm going to pull people along who don't want to be pulled along." That was Michael's quote last night. He zeroed in on the weakness in every one of his teammates, and he attacked their weakness in practice and in the locker room and tried to make it a strength that he could lean on and trust in big playoff games. And it worked because he did toughen up Horace Grant and Scott Burrell and Steve Kerr and Will Perdue. He toughened them all up and brought them up to his level come playoff time. Result, 6-for-6 in championships.
And see, and there the problem I have, Skip, is that because he's 6-for-6, everything he did to get that, we overlook. No, Skip, no way, no how. We can't do that, Skip. I get it. Michael Jordan is supremely talented. But you can't say bullying is okay. LeBron James says we're top heavy. You and others excoriated him. Well, he's taking shots. You can't do that. Michael Jordan took literal shots, not figuratively, literal shots.
No. He never took any shots publicly. Nothing through the media ever. He didn't take shots at Scott Burrell or Horace Grant in the media. No.
Skip, I said he took a literal shot. He punched the man in the face. That's not figuratively, that's literal. That's what the term figuratively and literally means. He literally did take a shot. What am I missing?
And did it work? What did Steve Kerr say? In a weird way, it was the greatest thing that could have happened. Oh, I stood up to him and I won his respect. And Michael was quoted last night as saying, I gained respect for him. All of a sudden, they're on equal footing. I can trust him to take a big shot and make a big shot in a big finals game. Bingo. Way to go, Michael.
And then, we're looking at the documentary. He's calling Scottie Burrell a garden utensil, a garden instrument. How many times? What is that motivating? Now, I got to step you. I got to check you, bruh. I'm not going to continue to let you call me out my name. Skip, this is unacceptable. Skip, we got to stop this. This is not okay. Skip, you can't say because he was 6-for-6. Everything that he did to get there is okay. That's what you're doing. You can't do that. It's okay to say Jordan was unbelievable, but some of the things he did was wrong. It's okay to say some of the things that he did was wrong. You're window dressing. You're green lighting. Everything he did to get to 6-for-6, and that for me will not fly.
I'm getting goosebumps talking about this because I was there. I saw it from the inside out. He was relentlessly all over ridiculing Scott Burrell. And he pushed him. He even said last night, I tried to get him to fight me in a good way. Well, to your point, as you said earlier in the show, is there a good way to fight? He just wanted, he thought Scott Burrell, who once upon a time was the 20th overall pick in the draft, who was drafted twice by Major League Baseball, who could have had a future in baseball as well as basketball. He saw him as soft from the start, and Scottie Burrell was soft. He had all kinds of nice shooting talent, but he was not mentally tough enough. Jordan toughened him up, and I told you on that run to the final Last Dance championship at Utah was a crucial game in a first-round matchup, a five-game matchup, five-game series at New Jersey. New Jersey played them close twice at the United Center, and game three was sold out, blow the roof off in New Jersey, and I thought they were in danger of losing that game. And guess who came up big? Well, Jordan came up huge because he had 38. But Scottie Burrell came off the bench in that game and scored 23 in 24 minutes. He lived up. And I think Michael was like a proud papa or a proud big brother after that game because he singled out Scottie Burrell and complimented him in the post-game session that I attended because he knew he had toughened him up enough that he could make big shots in a crucial game that could have gotten them in trouble if they had lost it. They won it and ended that series thanks to Scott Burrell. So he contributed in ways he was probably not capable of contributing until Michael made him a pet project. You can call it bullying, but bullying is when it's a bad guy with a black heart who wants to just bully somebody for bullying's sake because he's insecure about his own manhood. Jordan was as secure about his manhood as any player I was ever around. This was coaching. He was doing Phil Jackson's job of motivating, and he did it beautifully with Scott Burrell, and it worked.
Yeah, Skip, we got to be careful of this because what you're doing is that you're taking Michael Jordan and you're looking at the great ball player and you say because there's no malintent, there's no hatred in his heart, it's not bullying. Yes, it is. That's exactly what it is, Skip. You do not have to have ill intentions. If you use your position, if you use your place of authority in a situation to suppress, because that's what he was doing, calling that man out of his name, saying I wanted him to fight in a good way. What good way is that to fight? I don't know. Maybe this is how they do it up there in Wilmington, North Carolina. But from where I'm from, there is no good way to fight except square up and bump. That's the only way I know. So if that's what you're trying to get at, Skip, but you can't do that. You said because he had a good heart. I mean, hold on. That's what you say. I'm sure there are other people that came in contact with Michael Jordan that would say his heart isn't good. So why does when this is his documentary? I get it. But nah, you gotta miss me with this one. I don't agree with everything Michael did. 6 for 6 is what it is. Him being all-time great is what it is. But some of this, what he did, nah. You're gonna have to miss me with that one, Skip.
Shannon, I believe I was around Michael enough to know he actually had a really nice guy side to him. He could be a nice guy. And it was real, authentic, genuine. But in the end, when it was time to win a championship, there's no time for Mr. Nice Guy. This isn't Church League. It's not even AAU. It's not YMCA basketball. This is for legacy. This is for history. And he's going to lift you with him, as Steve Kerr said last night. He's going to make you be him so that he can trust you in the postseason. And it, again, Bill Winnington said, hey, in the end, it worked. And I don't think any of them hate Michael now because he won them a whole lot of jewels.
No mercy.
With his new team in Tampa, Tom Brady has several elite receiving options as well as the return of Rob Gronkowski. And according to Fox Bet, Brady now has the 8th best odds to win MVP this coming season. So, Shannon, is this just right or a bit too low for Mr. Tom Brady?
I'm surprised they're that low. Skip, in your 40 years of journalism, you understand that sports is just not about scores. It's about stories. Nobody coming into the 2020 season has a more compelling story than one Tom Brady. 20 years in one organization, leaves, goes to a franchise that has not been to the playoffs in over a decade, leads them to the playoffs, gets a play. Skip, the story is there. It's to be written. All Tom Brady has to do is the end. It's there. It's the most compelling story. Now, do I believe? I think he should have been, obviously I believe he should have been higher considering what the story is about around him. Now, we haven't had a back-to-back a regular season MVP, Skip, if I'm not mistaken, since Peyton Manning, and we're probably going to have to go back to 2008, 2009, something like that, maybe even further. But if I'm not mistaken, Peyton was the last back-to-back MVP. So, yeah, Mahomes or Lamar winning that, okay, yeah, but is that a more compelling story than Tom Brady leaving one organization after 20 years, setting out on his own and getting a team that hasn't won, that's known for futility, into the playoffs? Skip, that's going to be an unbelievable story if that were to happen. And I think Tom Brady should have been a little bit higher on the MVP odds.
Wait a second. Did I just hear Shannon Sharp give Tom Brady a real shot at being the National Football League most valuable player?
No, that's not what I said, Skip. I said he's too low. I would still take Lamar. Skip, my homeboy is plus 375. I'm not putting up no $375 to win a dollar. You're crazy that, I mean, doing $100? No. I mean, Tom Brady's going to skip. You know, gamblers, they do odds. I don't do that. I don't got the tolerance. I don't got the stomach for it. You know how gambling works. I don't got the stomach for that, Skip. A little bit, but not like this, no. I would take Mahomes. I would tell you what I'm going to do, Skip Baylor. I'm going to take Mahomes and L-Jack. I give you the feel for two cases.
For two cases with field.
Two cases.
Well, you obviously, you're going way out on the limb there, aren't you? How about I get Tom Brady, and I'll bet you one case, but if I win, I get 22 cases because he's 22-1 on Fox Bet. Yes.
No.
Let's do the odds. 22-1. No. I'll bet you one case on Tom Brady. You give me 22 cases. That's what Fox Bet says.
Skip, I'm giving you the old Tiger Woods. You got Tiger. I got Tiger. You take the field. In this situation, I got L. Jack and my homeboy. You got the field. I mean, you got Russ. You got Aaron Rodgers. You got Drew Brees. Brady. Yeah. Come on, Skip. Dak. What about
Aaron Rodgers? Dak has zero shot. Okay. Back
what
to
about
my
Dak
premise
and,
here.
And Brady.
We're talking about Tom Brady here. Thomas Edward Patrick Brady Jr. is 22-1, the eighth choice, says Fox Bet. If I were a betting man, I'd put a couple of bucks or maybe a couple of more bucks on that.
Yeah.
Because I'm even hearing Shannon Sharp, the Hall of Famer on Undisputed. I think he's actually saying that he fears that Brady, story plus stats, will be right in the thick of the MVP race. Because I'll give you that. He does have a feel-good fairy tale narrative in place. You're right. Mm-hmm. He went to the worst franchise in all of sports in overall career winning percentage. He went to a team that was 7-9 and missed the playoffs last year. And he is in position with the weapons that he gains there, plus Gronkowski, to make a run at MVP. I've already told you that several times, sitting right here in this chair over the last month. He has a real shot, and it's not just because of story, because story alone will not win you MVP. You need wins and you need stats. And I believe Brady, in the end, will have both. I believe that Tampa Bay, or as I call them, Tampa Bay, they'll win 12 games. And I believe they'll, by one game, they're going to win their division, the NFC South.
Okay.
It may even be a dead heat. Maybe it'll be both 12 wins. I just believe that Tampa Bay will somehow have the tiebreaker and win the division. If they get to 12 off only 7 last year, and Tom can put up the kind of numbers Jameis did, but on the positive side of the ledger, he'll be right in the thick of it. Jameis threw for the most yards in pro football last year, 5,000-plus yards. Brady will throw for 5,000-plus, and I believe he will lead the league in passing yards. I believe he'll lead it easily in touchdowns. Jameis had 33 last year to Lamar's 36, which led the NFL. I believe Brady will throw 40 touchdown passes. I believe that Brady will cut Jameis's 30 interceptions down to under 10. I believe it'll be somewhere 9-ish. It could be 10, but it'll be like 40-10, 40-9. And with those kind of numbers and that kind of team success, it's going to be hard to keep him out of the race. And if you then throw underneath it the feel-good fairy tale narrative to gird it, to lift it, man, he's going to have a real shot. So I think 22-1 is outrageously wrong. And I believe that there's going to be this Tampa Bay tidal wave in Tampa Bay of an offense that will rival Mahomes and rival Lamar's because they have the weapons. Obviously, Tom had none of these weapons last year. Now he has two Pro Bowl wideouts. On top of Gronk, he has two other very good tight ends in O.J. Howard and Cameron Brate. His offensive line got better with Tristan Wirfs, who they stole in the draft, trading from 14 to 13. He'll be their new right tackle. Stud, way to go. And I think Donald Jones, who's a second-round pick out of USC, who can catch the ball out of the backfield, and then my little man, Keyshawn Vaughn out of Vanderbilt, who they stole in the third round this year, will give him James White-ish kind of players coming out of the backfield. Then on top of that, Bruce Arians has football offensive genius about him. Tom Moore, the overseer, the advisor to this offense, definitely does. So you give Tom all that, that's a recipe for MVP. So it's not just the story he's got going for him. It's the firepower. It's the brain power. It's set up perfectly for him to have the perfect storm down on the Gulf Coast. So I love his odds. They should be way up there. They should be just behind Mahomes and Lamar as the third choice. And right now they're clear down at the eighth choice. And I believe that you are seeing exactly what I'm seeing, and you are scared to death of what Brady might do in Tampa Bay.
Well, Skip, look, at the end of the day, it's still a stat award. I mean, it's kind of like the Heisman Trophy, Skip. You could have team can be 14-0, but if you don't have the stats behind it, you're not winning that award. So at the end of the day, the MVP is a stat award. Now, when we get this compelling story behind it, Skip, like I say, we know Tampa Bay has been mired in futility for a decade. At the bare minimum, I'm saying a decade, and I'm kind of being nice. And you get Tom that left an organization with the success that he's had in New England. And all of a sudden, after 20 years, he leaves that, comes down to Tampa. So, Skip, you know what? I might put me my 25 bands on this thing right here. I'm just saying, I just might do that, Skip. I ain't got nothing to lose. I mean, with the odds. Now, look, for you to win any kind of money on, you can't even win no money on Patrick Mahomes, boy. Now, Skip, I believe Lamar Jackson, because of his legs, he's going to have, Skip, I believe he'll rush for over 1,000 yards again. He's going to have, I don't know if he'll throw for 36, but he's going to have, you know, they added weapons around him so they can get better. Now, his passing might not be what it was last year because they did add J.K. Dobbins, so they're probably going to want to run it again. But, Skip, he's going to have numbers. He might have games where he rushed for 100 or rushed for like 90 yards, 90 to 100, and then throw for 185 to 200. So when you look at it again, Skip, he's going to be over 3,000 yards. He's going to be over 1,000 yards rushing. So he's always going to be in the mix. My homeboy, Skip, you know Andy Reid. Andy Reid throws the football. My homeboy's going to throw it. And then they got the running back that they can dump it to out of the backfield. So he's going to throw, and he's like, you know what? Throw some more, and then, throw some more on top of that. So those two guys will be there. But like you said, I believe Tom will be there also. He has weapons. And if he can get this team, Skip, because remember, Peyton Manning would have won the MVP his first year in Denver had Adrian Peterson not had that ungodly season coming back basically 6 months off of a torn ACL. So Tom is prime. He's in a prime position, Skip. He sees the favorites, and he can just draft and then maybe like the last four or five games, put some big numbers up, and then like the voters going to be like, man, Tom, and plus, Skip, he's 43. 43-year-old, getting a team to the playoffs, having deep. Skip, he don't have to throw for 5,000. If he can throw for 4,000 with, 30 touchdowns and get this team to the playoffs, Skip, I believe 11-5 season will win Tom Brady the MVP, Skip. And I'm going to put some money on it just in case he does.
Really? So you're going to put money on a quarterback that you have told me for four straight years here on Undisputed is washed up. You have said for 4 years, this is the end of Tom Brady. And you told me after last year that his skills had dangerously declined. And now you're saying you're going to put money on him to win MVP next year? How is that possible? I thought you would laugh at this question and say he should be 100-1.
I'm going to put 25 bands. That way, if I'm wrong, I'll be $500,000 richer for being wrong. That's what I'm going to do.
But wait a 22 second.
22-1, Skip.
So
you
completely flipped. I finally convinced you that the GOAT is still capable of being the GOAT. I've told you that at 43, I don't see any diminished skills. Tampa Bay said they diminished skills.
Well, how about we go in and pool our little money together? You know, back in the day, like college days, Skip, we go get a couple of pieces. We go, hey, man, how much money you got? Man, I got $1.50. I got 50 cents. I got 75. We pool our money in. We go get a couple of pieces, you know, maybe like 3 boxes of donuts, something like that, Skip. So I think if we pool our money in, put this thing together, we can come out looking real good, Skip. I like money. I don't know about you, but I like money. Yeah.
I just appreciate the fact that you have admitted to the undisputed audience that you believe Tom Brady is still fully capable of winning this coming season's MVP of the NFL. Thank you for that, Shannon Sharp. I appreciate you. Humility.
What I've done to the audience is convince them that I like money more than I dislike being wrong.
This is a good sign. I'm going to remember this day. Shannon is starting to understand. Finally, do not bet against Tom Brady. No mercy. After it was reported this week that Tom Brady and Patriots offensive coordinator Josh McDaniels' relationship was deteriorating, another report piled on. It said that part of that relationship falling apart stemmed from Brady feeling like McDaniels was phasing him out of the game plan process. So, Shannon, what does this tell you?
It's telling me that we're getting every excuse, Jenny, why Tom Brady wasn't successful that last year as he has been in the past. Now, it was Coach Belichick starting to wear on him. Now, it was Josh McDaniels phasing him out, wasn't allowing him to implement plays into the game plan. It's hard for me to believe a guy of Tom Brady's status, because I've been around quarterbacks that less status, not even a third of the status that Tom Brady has, and the coach is like, okay, bud, what you like? What do you like in this situation? What do you like on first down? What do you like on second and 10? What do you like on third? Third and short, third and long? But we want to get plays that you like in order for this. But what we're seeing here is that sources tell me is that what we're starting to see, Jenny, things that we can never get out. We never heard anything about Tom Brady until now, all of a sudden. No contract extension. That was not extended. Now everything, all the house of cards come falling down. Whatever, Skip, Tom, you're in New England. I mean, you're in Tampa now. Be happy with that. Now, all of a sudden, you want to try to poo-poo on everybody. You never had a problem. Josh McDaniels has been Josh McDaniels from day one. But now, you didn't get the contract extension, and you want to say, well, this is the reason why. I didn't play well. This is the reason why. We don't do excuses. As Skip Bayless told me about The Last Dance, Michael Jordan did not make excuses, and the information did not leak out. So I don't want to hear nothing about what happened last year or the years past in New England. You're with the Bucks, move on. And Coach Belichick and Josh McDaniels said, good riddance.
Time out. Are you suggesting that this story came from a leak from Tom Brady or somebody in his camp? Is that what you're saying?
So are you saying this came from Josh McDaniels?
No, it came from reporters. It came from Gary Myers, who wrote a book on Brady and Peyton, who's close to people inside the Patriots. It came from Christopher Gasper, who covered the Patriots for 5 years, became a columnist for the Boston Globe, still works in Boston television. They're just reporting something that Brady is trying to shoot down. He posted yesterday on Instagram, please stop the nonsense. Please be more responsible with your reporting. He's saying that 19 years together with Josh McDaniels, we're brothers for life. So he's trying to knock it down. It's not coming from Brady. He doesn't want this out. He doesn't like this notion. But what I'm saying is, it's now becoming like broken glass clear to me that Bill Belichick was doing everything in his power to force Tom Brady out the last 3 years, especially last year. Because help me out, Shannon, who has final say on game plans on offense and defense? Bill Belichick. That's not Josh McDaniels' call. Trust me on this. If Tom Brady's favorite plays were being phased out of the offense, it wasn't Josh McDaniels doing that with final say. It was Belichick. I told you before that it feels to me like Belichick was sabotaging Tom Brady, especially last year, trying to make sure he could not succeed so he couldn't argue to finish out his career for the next 2 or 3 years in New England. He wanted him to fail last year. So what did he do? He gave him the worst receiving core in pro football. The tight ends, worst production in all of pro football. The offensive line, below average in protection last year. Sony Michel, who was very good the year before, especially during the run to the Super Bowl, was mysteriously in the doghouse all year, just the way Malcolm Butler was mysteriously in the doghouse for the entire Super Bowl that they lost to Philadelphia, Nick Foles, 41-33. It felt sabotagey to me. And this feels even sabotagier because it feels like Bill Belichick was doing everything in his power to make sure that Tom Brady didn't have a leg left to stand on with Robert Kraft. Even though Kraft tried to keep him in the bitter end, Brady looked at the cupboard as being bare. He said, I don't want to try to play with that again next year. I got no chance. That's why I feel sorry for Stid, as Belichick calls him. But, hey, no, Belichick wanted the opportunity. Yeah, you got it. Belichick wants to go fly solo. He wants to show the world I can win without Tom Brady. Well, I say good luck because I'm going to remind everybody out there one more time that in 4 of his 5 years as the head coach of the Cleveland Browns, Belichick had a losing record. His first year in New England, he went 5-11. His second year started 0-2. That was a grand total as a head coach of 41-57 before Tom Brady fell out of the sky into his lap in game number 3 as the starting quarterback that year. And the rest is dynastic history. Belichick is a product of Tom Brady, and now we're going to see him exposed without Tom Brady.
But, Skip, we've seen this before. We've seen things come out of the Patriots organization. We've heard reports, and Tom Brady shoots it down. Just like when it came out that he didn't have a problem with, he didn't do what Seth Wickersham wrote the story about the fallout and about them wanting to keep Jimmy Garoppolo and move on. And Tom Brady, everything is fine. We love it. Everybody signed the letter. Come to find out that was a lie. That was the beginning. So, Skip, you do realize that once a person realizes that you've lied, they can have a right to dispute anything else that comes out of your mouth. That's the way it works. You do realize that. So because Tom Brady has lied in certain situations before, how are we to believe this now that, oh, yeah, that was the case? Skip, let me tell you what happened to me. There were times that when John retired, I would go to Coob, and I was like, Coob, man, I really like this play. You remember me and John used to run it. He's like, Bub, we ain't got John back there. I believe there was a situation, Skip, that maybe Tom would want to run some plays. But he's like, we ain't got Gronk. We don't have the guys that have the concept, Tom, the makeup that when you want to just do something on the fly or audible to something, we don't have the guys that can pick that up. Now, Skip, that might have been a case. But to just like, no, Tom, we're not running that. No, Tom, we're not running that. Skip, I don't believe that to be the case. Now, it could be. Now, because Josh McDaniels is real slimy. He's a snake, Skip. Ain't no sugar, no way around that. Any man that will go tell the owner, yes, I'm going to be the head coach of your team, and then jilt them at the last second, and they got to give a press release and talk about he's not coming, I don't trust it. So I don't trust Josh McDaniels, Skip, but I don't like all these excuses to why Tom Brady wasn't at his absolute best last year. All that could be true because Josh McDaniels is a snake, and I wouldn't trust him as far as I can see him. And I got good vision, but once I close the door, I can't see him behind the door. I don't trust him. So Tom could be right, but Tom put this out there. I'm just saying that Tom put it out there.
Tom put this out there is ridiculous. It's absurd. It's ASA 9, ASA 10, ASA 12, as in the great GOAT Tom Brady.
Let me ask you a question. So how would reporters know? How would personnel know that Tom is being phased out unless one of the two parties that's being there, the guy that's getting phased out or the guy that's phasing out, says something? So somebody had to tell somebody something.
Yeah. I'm sure Christopher Gasper, who tweeted this yesterday about being phased out, I'm sure he knows lots of the assistant coaches. I'm sure he knows the personnel people. I'm sure he has lots of sources inside the Patriots. And to your point about how snaky Josh McDaniel might be, yes. He coached under, or coaches under, one of the all-time scoundrels, a guy who got busted for Spygate, right? Yeah. Didn't Belichick? Yeah. In fact, the great Don Shula, may he rest in peace, passed the other day. What did Don Shula call Bill Belichick? He publicly called him Belichick. Okay.
He gave him that name. He did.
That's that guy.
He did. Skip. He did. So, Skip, you know birds of a feather flock together. That's why Josh McDaniels wouldn't leave. You got Coach Belichick literally going to have to kick him out the nest because he knows where all the bears, all the bodies are buried.
He does. I totally agree, which is why the head coach, the man with final say, told Josh, we got to start pulling some of Tom's favorite plays. We got to make him unhappy. We got to make sure he can't succeed this year. And they did everything in their power to make it virtually impossible for Tom to succeed. And all he did was put them in position to have the two seed in the AFC. He has what he did 1,000 times before in New England, a great drive against the Dolphins in the last regular season game, 75 yards for a touchdown, 2 minutes to go. They're up four, and here comes Fitzmagic? You're kidding. And he goes 80 yards and 13 against Belichick's defense, and you give up a touchdown to win the game and lose the two seed? Yeah. I don't know. It looks like sabotage-y to me.
Skip, but here's the thing. But you told me Coach Belichick saddled him with the worst offensive weapons of Tom Brady's career, but you still want Tom to run the same plays that he had been effective with the worst offensive weapons that he's ever had. How does that make sense? Skip, if you take the weapons away, why am I going to go to battle with the weapons less than what I've ever had before? I'm not going to start a war with muskets. I need some heavy artillery if I'm going to go to war with. Well, Tom wants to go to war with muskets.
Well, then I don't know what he's supposed to do.
Well, they deserve
each other. Rex Burkhead every play?
Well, how about this here? They deserve each other. All of them should have been made. Mr. Kraft should have made everybody stay together for another 2 years. They deserve each other because all of them snaky. No
mercy. An article in the South Florida Sun Sentinel made the case that the Dolphins should start Tua Tagovailoa week one. The case was made that Tua proved by being the fifth overall pick in the draft, he should be trusted. Russell Wilson was an example used as one of the best quarterbacks in the league today that started every game his rookie season. Shannon, should Tua start week one? This is your guy.
Let me ask you a question. Is the best quarterback in the game is who? Patrick Mahomes, did he start week one? He started one game. He started week 17. Oh, my bad. So that proves that strategy works also. This notion that one size fit all, Russell Wilson did it. Aaron Rodgers, how many times did he start the first 2 years, first 3 years? Okay, so that proves that strategy does work. You can, no matter how high he gets drafted, you can sit a quarterback. Carson Palmer didn't start a game. I believe that looking at it from the outside looking in, I believe that Ryan Fitzpatrick is going to get every opportunity to start the season. And if something were to unforeseen happen, he's not playing well, he gets nicked, Tua will come in and take it the rest of the way. That's what I believe. I also believe, given that the way Fitzpatrick played down the stretch, he's earned the right. They didn't clear the decks. Now, if they'd have done it, Joe Burrow, clear the decks, got no problem. Tua, you're up. Go navigate this boat down the harbor. But that's not what they did. They kept Fitzpatrick on this roster for a reason. And I believe that what they're going to do, Skip, is that they're going to give Ryan Fitzpatrick every opportunity to start. He will start the season. And if he gets injured or he's not playing well, Tua will come in and ultimately succeed him and move and be the starting quarterback for the Miami Dolphins. So I believe that is the course of action. I believe that is the best course of action. I don't care if they took him with the fifth pick. I don't care if you believe, if I said he's better than Joe Burrow. I'm telling you, in that situation is what they should do. Because guess what? Dan Marino, is he any good, Jenny? He didn't start opening day. No further questions, Your Honor.
I have one, Your Honor. Shannon Sharp, before Patrick Mahomes was drafted, when he was at Texas Tech, did you once say on Undisputed, that's the best player in this draft? He's going to win MVPs in the National Football League. Did you say that?
No.
Predict that?
No, I only saw it.
You did not.
Skip only saw it one time against Oklahoma.
Okay, I saw him a lot, and I'll be the first to say I've been very good on picking quarterbacks, as I've detailed here recently, but I didn't see this coming. I thought he'd be pretty good. I didn't see this when he was at Texas Tech. I watched him a lot, even that big shootout against Baker Mayfield, and I thought, man, he's awfully raw, but he fell into the perfect situation with maybe the best group of weapons around him in the National Football League and a coach who adores him and is going to do everything in Andy Reid's power to make him successful. But that first year, Andy Reid had Alex Smith at his peak in his prime, healthy Alex Smith. They went 12-4 that year and were vying for the top seed in the AFC. So he didn't need Patrick Mahomes to start. The Dolphins do need Tua to start. And I'm sorry, I'm shocked that you're not putting your money where your mouth was before the draft. Because before the draft, I held your feet to the fire. I asked you repeatedly, Shannon Sharp, you have zero injury concerns when it comes to your man,
zero.
Tua? You said zero.
Okay? Less than zero.
Independent doctors reportedly said they have MRI'd Tua. He's 1,000% recovered from his hip surgery. He's 100% healthy from head to toe, said, I think, two independent doctors. Okay, so you said he's better than Joe Burrow, that he should go number one overall, yet Joe Burrow is slated to start game one for a much worse football team than Tua's on in Miami because the Bungles had the worst record in the league last year. And yet you're going to throw Joe Burrow into that fire right off the bat and you're going to stunt Tua's growth in Miami, Ryan Fitzpatrick, for whom you have little, you have little respect for Ryan Fitzpatrick. You always tell me, oh, he can ride the roller coaster. He'll go up one year and then he'll go way down when you least expect it. So why would the Dolphins, who ended the year with serious momentum, they beat the Eagles and then they won at New England. Brian Flores got it going. They had a tremendous offseason and a very good draft. So why wouldn't he say, let's go with our kid. We stole him with the fifth pick. Shannon Sharp says he's the best player in the draft, much better than Joe Burrow. So why wouldn't we just play him in game one? He's 100% healthy. I don't get it. It sounds like you're speaking out of both sides of mouth.
No, I'm not, Skip. I've been very clear on this, Skip. Like I said, I just believe, like, for in a situation like this, Skip, if you have a veteran guy, you can always go back to the veteran. But if a rookie struggles, Skip, it's been proven that normally when rookies struggle, it takes them a long, long time to get out of that. So why not just let Fitz come in? He gets a true understanding because I think in the long run, Skip, this is what's going to help him because he'll have a better understanding, a better appreciation for playing the position of quarterback. Joe Burrow, Skip, they removed any possible doubt that he wasn't going to start. Remember, they released Andy Dalton. If Andy Dalton had been on the roster, it would have been very interesting to see how this thing would have played out. But they removed Andy Dalton because they want Joe Burrow to start opening day. In this situation, I believe it's best that Ryan Fitzpatrick start because you can always, if he doesn't play well, you can go to Tua. It's Skip, you start with Tua, he struggles a little bit, you go to Ryan Fitzpatrick, it's going to be hard for you to go back to Tua at that point in time during the season. And that's why they did it with Eli. Look at Eli and Daniel Jones. They started Eli. Eli didn't play well. They went to Daniel Jones, and Eli didn't get back in there until Daniel Jones got hurt. Daniel Jones healed up. Eli went back to the bench. I believe that's the correct way to play it.
It sounds like you're expressing some serious doubts about Tua's ability, not his ability to stay healthy, just his ability, period. If you think he might struggle, then you don't think he was the best player in the draft.
Skip, look, you can do all that other stuff. Look, there have been situations. Name the first round pick that came right out the box and did not struggle. Nate, I'm not talking about a fourth rounder or a third rounder, because there was no pressure. There was no expectations on Russell. There was no expectations on Dak. I'm saying the first round picks that started day one and did not struggle. Who?
Baker Mayfield, Kyler Murray. Both of them played extraordinarily well right out of the box.
Hold on. Baker start opening day? Baker started opening day.
No, but he should have. I told you he should have.
When he finally got a shot on that Thursday night,
he just lit it up.
See, there you go with should. I ask you a simple question. Did
Kyler
started
Kyler
day one?
He
didn't struggle.
Kyler tied Detroit on opening Sunday.
Skip, I'm going to tell you how great Detroit is. Miss Ford said she needs to see improvements, or the whole staff is going to Detroit. That's how good Detroit is. The owner, who rarely speaks, says, if I don't see improvement, they're gone. That Detroit?
Okay.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that Detroit.
No, thank you.
Matt Stafford had the fourth best QBR in football last year. That Detroit. That's what I'm talking about.
No, Skip.
I'm also talking about your guy, Tua. I told you about Tua, hurt in college, hurt in the pros. The oldest NFL bromide. Hurt in college, hurt in the pros. I'm going to say it one more time. Rex Ryan reported on ESPN that his NFL sources, I'm sure he knows some people around the league, told him that Tua had five surgeries while he was at Alabama. We know he had a career-threatening hip surgery. We had both ankle surgery. We know that. He had both tightrope surgeries on both ankles. I believe he had a knee scope, and I know he broke his index finger on his throwing hand and needed surgery. I know he had a concussion. I know he had a broken nose. I know he had a badly pulled quad. I know he was hurt a whole lot at Alabama. And I also know that I saw him struggle in that SEC championship game against Georgia so badly, he got yanked in the fourth quarter and Jalen Hurts came in and saved their bacon. He outscored Georgia 14-0 in the SEC championship game and gave Tua a shot then to go play Clemson ultimately in the championship game, and Tua threw two more picks in that game. I thought Tua missed way too many throws. He was barely 50% against LSU in Tuscaloosa last year. I told you, I saw him get a little jittery, a little antsy, a little happy-footed because he'd been beat up so much and he tends to take too many shots. I think he can be pretty good. I just don't think he's going to be better than Joe Burrow, who did not miss a throw in the SEC championship game or against Oklahoma or against Clemson. He was all-time spectacular in those three games to finish it off.
If you don't mind me asking, who has the highest QBR, efficiency rating between Tua and Joe Burrow? As a matter of fact, who has the highest QBR in the history of the game? Oh, so that's over a period of time. That's just not one year. And Skip, you keep talking about Jalen Hurts came in, but you will never mention about Tua coming in the national championship game and saving Jalen Hurts bacon. Why you keep dropping? Do you forget that game? That did happen, right? Okay.
Yep, it happened.
So
did those struggle games
Tua
that I talked about. Okay? If you
got Joe
Tua,
Burrow, I got
put
Tua
your do where your mouth is. Put your do up on the table. Start him in game one because you believe in him, and you said zero injury concerns. Have some guts and some faith.
Hold on. Did Lamar Jackson start the season? MVP. Pat Mahomes, did he start the season? MVP.
Lamar came in soon because Flacco got hurt, and Lamar took him to the playoffs as a rookie.
Thank you.
It happened.
Thank you. Thank you making my case for me. They started the vet.
Yep.
He got hurt, playing bad. Lamar comes in. Same thing. Ryan Fitzpatrick gets hurt, or he doesn't play well. Tua comes in. Ta-da!
Okay. Oh, over-under on Joe Burrow starting game one is 3,746 passing yards. You got over or under. I'll take over that for a case of due. Want to do it right now?
Over or under, who has the better career, Tua or Joe Burrow? I got Tua, you got Joe Burrow. 10 cases of due right now.
10, you got it. Done. Thank you. You finally put your due where your mouth is. No mercy.